Hello, welcome to this podcast. Today I have with me ACCA's Chief Economist, Michael Taylor, who's going to tell us a little bit about the latest Global Economic Conditions Survey and what it shows us about the outlook for the global economy. So, Michael, what are the main messages of the survey?
The main message from our latest Global Economic Conditions Survey is that the global economy is slowing, as expected, but it's not heading into a severe slowdown or a recession. The big confidence measure of all the accountants who responded to the survey showed a slight fall in the second quarter compared with the level of the first quarter. But importantly, confidence did not fall back to its low point that it reached at the end of 2018. Throughout last year, this global confidence measure fell as the United States increased interest rates and global trade tensions increased. So it wasn't surprising that confidence was at a very low level at the end of last year. And since then, we've had a bounce in confidence in the first quarter and a slight fallback in the second quarter. So the message is, yes, the global economy is slowing after several years of strong growth, but it's likely to still to be a reasonably steady performance. Looking at the breakdown of confidence across countries and regions this quarter, it's perhaps not surprising that the biggest falls took place in the United States and China. Those are the two protagonists, obviously, of the trade war. And it was during this quarter that the United States imposed 25% tariffs on £200 billion worth of Chinese imports, ratcheting up the trade war between the two countries. And that's clearly had an effect, I think, on confidence. Confidence also fell in the United Kingdom. I think that's for a fairly obvious reason, that the Brexit uncertainty persists and will do so until at least the end of October this year. But there were some positive signs. In South Asia, confidence was fairly stable, and there were slight increases in confidence in Western Europe and in Central and Eastern Europe too. So the picture is not uniform. I think that's very important. If confidence had been falling throughout in every country and region, that would have been a matter of concern. But that didn't happen. Confidence did increase in some places. So I think that confirms to me the message that, yes, we're having a global economic slowdown, but we're not heading into a severe recession-type environment.
Okay, thanks, Michael. So what about the inflation outlook?
Well, the global inflation outlook has improved considerably over the last year. The survey reports diminished concern about inflation among accountants in each of the last four quarters. And this obviously continued in the second quarter. And we're seeing now in many countries that inflation is actually quite low. In fact, for some central banks, it's too low. And looking at the whole global economy and picture this year, the biggest change that we've seen is from the US Federal Reserve, which is now looking to cut interest rates, whereas throughout last year, interest rates were going up in anticipation of higher inflation and growth being too strong. Now the Federal Reserve are concerned about uncertainty, trade wars, etc., and they are about to start easing monetary policy. And that is a really big change that we've seen this year, and it's caught a lot of people, a lot of analysts caused a lot of surprise. But that is good news because a lower US interest rates, of course, will allow a lot of other countries also to cut their interest rates. A lot of emerging markets have their exchange rates fixed with the US dollar. Lower US interest rates means they can lower interest rates as well. And it's not just in the US. In the Eurozone, inflation is also well below their target of below but close to 2%. And it looks as though the European Central Bank will be cutting their monetary policy or easing their monetary policy in the second half of this year too. So the global inflation outlook is actually very benign, and it will allow measures to be introduced to support growth, which is another reason, I think, to not fear that we're about to head into a severe global economic slowdown.
And what are the main risks to the outlook?
Well, of course, whatever the outlook is, there are always risks either side to any forecast of the global economy. And the main downside risks highlighted, I think, in our latest survey, first of all, is the trade wars issue between the US and China, which I will talk about in more detail later. But that could have significant economic consequences if it escalates from the current state of play. But in addition to that, there are other downside risks. The Chinese economy is slowing even before the trade dispute with the United States. China has a very high level of debt, and the authorities are concerned about that. And a lot of Chinese growth over the last 10 years has been fueled by an increase in debt. If that process has now come to an end, which the action of the authorities would suggest that it has, then China is heading into a much lower profile for economic growth. And of course, over the last 10, 20 years, an awful lot of global economic growth has been driven by a rapidly expanding China. But I think that period is now coming to an end, and we may be heading into a period where China is dealing with some of these economic imbalances which we see in other economies, the US and the UK, for example. And that means the Chinese economy will be slowing. And the data we've just had suggests that that is the case. In the second quarter, the Chinese economy grew at 6.2% an annual rate. Whilst that is very good from a UK or US or Eurozone perspective, for a developing economy like China, that represents quite a slowdown. And I think the risks are that with the effects of the trade war, limited policy options because of the high level of debt, that the Chinese economy continues to slow. And that is a downside risk for the global economy. Another risk is a no-deal Brexit. That is, the UK leaves the EU without a deal with the European Union and without any transition period. The effects of that will be obviously predominantly on the UK and some EU countries, but it will nevertheless have an overall negative effect on the global economy, and it could add to volatility in financial markets as well. And finally, on top of all that, the Eurozone economy, which is second only to the United States in its overall size, is slowing. Germany in particular is struggling. This year it will grow at less than 1% probably. I think the risks there are also on the downside. Obviously, these are all individual risks, and I think it would be highly unlikely that they would all take place at the same time, but they are clearly something we need to watch as we go through the second half of this year and into 2020.
Thanks, Michael. So there is a lot of concern about the effect of the trade war between the US and China, and that it could cause a widespread downturn in the global economy. How bad could it be?
So how bad could things get with the trade war between the US and China? This is a question which comes up quite a lot. First of all, so far, the effects are relatively limited. Both the US and China have very large domestic markets. They're not particularly reliant on exports for economic growth. So the effect on their economies will be relatively limited. And most estimates from organizations such as the International Monetary Fund and the OECD suggest that even if 25% tariffs, for example, were put on all Chinese imports into the United States, the effect would be to reduce growth in the US over a three-year period by maybe 0.1, 0.2% per year. I mean, that is clearly a hit to growth, but it's not sufficient to send the US economy into a recession. Similarly, in China, the effect on China would be greater because China exports more to the US than the US exports to China, so the effect there is a little bit greater. But even so, it's not so significant that it would knock large percentage points off Chinese growth. That's the sort of the base case, if you like. But there are potential for knock-on effects, and there is, on top of those direct effects, sort of indirect effects caused by uncertainty, the fear that those trade tensions may continue to rise, and that they spread not just between the US and China, but more widely. And we are already seeing that. The most recent example is Japan basically making it more difficult for its producers of key industrial materials needed to produce computer chips. They're making it more difficult for them to be exported to Korea which has the two largest producers of computer chips in the world. And that's a dispute that's actually a diplomatic dispute relating to forced labor during the war. It's not actually a direct economic dispute. But it's a worrying development in that these diplomatic issues are now spreading into increased trade restrictions. And it's something that the World Trade Organization have expressed deep concern about, because they are identifying significant examples of this now, where trade restrictions are increasing in the global economy. This period of globalization that we saw from 1945 up until very recently has at least stalled now, and there is a risk that it starts going into reverse. But I think where the transmission could really hurt a lot of other economies, in particular export-dependent emerging markets, would be through the financial markets. If, for example, financial markets became increasingly concerned about the trade issue, there could be what analysts refer to as a risk-off moment. That is, capital flows move away from riskier assets, emerging market bonds and equities, for example, back into safer assets, for example, US Treasury bonds, the Japanese yen. This was the process we saw during the global financial crisis 10 years ago, and it contributed to the downward swing in the global economy. I'm not suggesting for a minute that we're heading into that sort of environment, but it's that sort of process, I think, that transmission whereby the global trade war, or a trade war between the US and China, could actually have much wider effects across the global economy, and in particularly hurt emerging markets, which until recently have actually been enjoying quite reasonable growth. That is my sort of big concern for the trade war situation.
So finally, the US has enjoyed uninterrupted economic growth for about 10 years now, but there are some significant structural changes taking place, I believe.
The US economy has grown continuously for the last 10 years, and that actually is the longest sustained period of growth since 1850, I believe. But whilst that growth has been taking place and ongoing, there has been some, I think, quite important structural changes which will affect both how the US economy performs and the behaviour of its policymakers. There are three issues which I'll just touch on briefly. The first one is actually, in many ways, a positive development, in that there appears to have been this shift in the relationship between unemployment and wages growth. Intuitively, you would expect, as unemployment falls, that labour markets become tighter, and that puts upward pressure on wages, and that then feeds through into inflation. That's a sort of standard intuitive process. That process still exists, but what we've seen over the last few years is that in the United States, it appears that the US can now have lower unemployment rates and lower wages growth. At the moment, the unemployment rate in the US is just 3.7%. Wages are 3.4%. Before the financial crisis, if unemployment was approaching 4%, then wage growth would be picking up also over 4% and raising concerns about inflation. The fact that there has been this structural shift, and in the report I discuss why this has taken place, but I think the important thing that to note is that it has taken place, and this now means that US interest rates can be kept lower for longer in the first instance, and as we're about to see or seeing now, even at very low levels of unemployment, interest rates can be cut without fear of triggering a big rise in inflation. So that's a positive. Another neutral effect, but a very interesting one, is the production of oil in the United States. The US is now the largest producer of oil in the world. Much more now than Saudi Arabia or Russia, the second and third big producers. But also, increasingly, the US is going to become a big exporter of oil. And indeed, the US Department of Energy now expects that as of 2020, the US will be a net exporter of energy overall. And this is a big change from the 1970s and the 1980s, when a big rise in the oil price represented a big deflationary impact on the US economy and risked pushing the economy into recession, and at the same time pushing inflation higher. Those days have definitely gone. And now it's almost the reverse, in that higher oil prices in future will provide a boost to the US economy. It'll boost investment in the oil sector, and it will also boost overall growth through its effect on the trade balance. And that is obviously a shift from what has taken place before. And it, I think it will represent a challenge, at least for the policymakers, in order to deal with the effects of the US becoming, as I say, a significant net exporter of energy and oil in coming years. And finally, a very much less positive issue in the United States at the moment is the rising level of public sector debt. This is approaching about 90% of GDP. And it's very interesting in that in just about every other advanced economy, debt, this is public sector debt as a proportion of the economy, is falling. Growth has now returned and budget deficits are under control. And that means the debt as a percentage of GDP is on the decline. But in the US, it's not. It's rising, and it's rising quite rapidly now, especially since last year's tax cuts, which obviously increased the budget deficit. That was added to the debt. And earlier in July, there was a deal to prevent this government shutdown, which you may recall occurred at the end of last year and early this year, as US politicians argued about the level of this sort of debt ceiling which exists in the United States. A deal has been done which pushes the next issue out to 2021. But in doing so, it allows for a further big increase in public sector debt and public spending. So what you're seeing actually is, first of all, the US is in the process of becoming a high public sector debt, high government spending economy, which is not the normal interpretation of how the US economy looks. But it also represents a challenge for policymakers, because obviously one of the ways in which an economy can be supported during a downturn is through an easing of fiscal policy. That is an increase in government spending or a reduction in taxes. But there's fairly good evidence that the higher is the level of public sector debt, that the less effective that policy becomes. And US debt is now very much at or approaching that level of debt, where concerns about how effective fiscal policy might be start increasing. And independent observers, such as the Congressional Budget Office, etc., are expressing grave concerns about this. And it is certainly something, I think, which represents a negative and a downside risk for the US economy going forward. So interestingly, monetary policy may become more effective and more flexible because of structural changes in the labour market. But because of the situation in relation to public sector debt, fiscal policy becomes more constrained and less effective. So anyway, these are sort of interesting developments in the US economy. They perhaps don't affect the immediate outlook, but I think it's worth taking a look and sort of just judging how things might change in the US over the next few years.
Okay, so thank you very much, Michael, for being with us today. This brings us to the end of our podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to read the latest Global Economic Conditions Survey, you can find it by visiting the ACCA Global website and navigating to the Professional Insights section. And look out for the next quarterly survey, which will be coming in the first part of October this year. Thanks very much. Goodbye.